is amateur hour.
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
AHPKC is brought to you by ArrowheadPride.com. This is a show about football and friendship and fun. We're truthful, but not always accurate. We're red and yellow and ridiculous. We're basically Andy Reid's wardrobe, but a podcast. Enough of the formalities. Can we talk Chiefs now? Let's go. Scott Hall and my co-host today, his Dirkness.
Hi, hello. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining the show today, his Dirkness.
Hey. What's up?
We're here to talk about our favorite football team, which is the Kansas City Chiefs.
Nebraska?
Which are terrible right now, and I think the easiest way to summarize how we're feeling right now is that I have not been looking forward to recording this podcast program.
Oh.
But the that's, end. That's
well,
that's
mainly this has been amateur hour.
Just because the Chiefs continue to find new ways to lose. I don't know if Sunday's game losing 38-31 against the Jets was all that new. It was actually quite reminiscent of the Oakland Raiders loss, who also happened to be our opponents this upcoming Sunday, tied for the AFC West lead. Also, along with the San Diego Chargers, Chiefs, Raiders, and Chargers all sit at 6-6, tied for third place in the AFC West, is what I would prefer to say.
Remnants of fuck, I don't know what year it was, but whenever Tim Tebow won the division at 8-8, like all four teams were within there, but hey, we still got the Broncos. Still got the Broncos that suck.
It's 10 after 2 p.m. Arrowhead time, and let's call it, I don't know, 90 minutes ago or so, my son, Marcus Peters, was suspended
by his dad.
Upcoming game. I'm gonna do some Ryan reads what Ryan has already tweeted.
All right.
If you guys are ready.
Yes.
I'm just gonna release this statement.
Release it all over us,
so that you guys are. Oh my gosh. That was vulgar.
I wasn't thinking of cocky or anything. Go on, do it.
But I went ahead and sent these tweets on Monday night because I was kind of expecting this to happen, so I said, I'd love to wait for amateur hour, but chances are we'll know the decision before we record. So,
you nailed it.
My
best prediction of the year
should be suspended for the Oakland game. I'm sure, much to many people's surprise, I said.
I was surprised, I will admit.
I said, Marcus cares so much about football. Take
football
it away from him, and that should hopefully wake his ass up. He needs a jolt. We need Marcus to be a leader, and I don't care if he's a quiet leader like Justin Houston or a vocal one like Eric Berry, but we need leadership from him. I love his passion, I understand his frustration, and I think that he's the least of our problems, but he can do better, and we desperately need him to. Dirk, what was your reaction to me essentially suspending my favorite Chiefs player?
I don't know. I didn't think you'd go there, I guess. I don't even know if I was in favor of it, really. But it was, we may have come to the kind of the same conclusion, and it involves leadership. And it's just a lack of leadership across the board on the team and on the defense specifically, I think. And, you know, I don't know. I've got my own thoughts, but do you want to expand on yours?
Let's start with this. First and foremost, I think we need to establish, whether people want to recognize this or agree with it or not, the fact of the matter is Marcus Peters was not suspended specifically for what happened on Sunday.
I would definitely agree with that.
I believe that
this was... It's been ongoing issues,
yeah,
I would say.
This is the culmination of some things that have happened over the past few years. And it just kind of got to a point where, to me...
Okay, so you're drawing everything.
I'm looking at, like, this since season or whatever, but...
I think it started with him yelling at Sutton.
Okay.
I think that was the beginning of the issues. Because that was the Redskins game. It was the Texans game. Redskins game, he was yelling at the fan. Texans game, he was yelling at Sutton. And I remember saying on that podcast, like, that was the biggest problem I've ever... That's the worst thing I think that Peters has ever done, is yell at Sutton. Because it just kind of bemeans him. It belittles him. Demeans him. I don't know.
Demean.
Yes. There you go. Behooves him. No, I don't think that fits.
That's definitely not the right word.
So I think the issues have... I think it started there. And I think it's kind of spread. Because then you saw kind of the tackling issues from him, where he wasn't necessarily going all out. And you may disagree with that. But I think there were definitely some tackles where it was lacking effort. You've seen some plays highlighted this week, and you may disagree with those. You've seen Marcus Peters throw his arms up in disgust, whether it be at the sideline, whether it be at players on the field. But he's obviously fed up. And so, yeah, I think it is the culmination of all that. I don't think it's the act, and I don't have a problem with the act. I don't really have a problem with the flag throw. I don't have a problem with him walking off the field. I don't think he quit on his team. I think everybody just assumed he was ejected because it was like, holy shit, he just did that. And there was a gross overreaction to him walking off the field, so I don't think it was him quitting on his team. I have the problem with him belittling his teammates with his on-field antics. And yes, I do think Travis Kelce does the exact same thing. And I think it's a bit of a toxic attitude, and I think it has kind of spread across the team to the point where once things start going bad for the team, they don't recover. They just start blaming each other and kind of mentally checking out, is what I see. And I think that's a toxic attitude, and I mean that... You can blame everyone across the whole board for getting to that point. Like, you can say Andy doesn't necessarily have control of the team. I think Andy prefers to let the locker room kind of control itself. And I don't think they're doing a good job of that. I think they're missing Eric Berry more than we can even comprehend. I think they're also missing secondary leaders like Mike DeVito, like, you know, Josh Maga, Hussein Abdullah, like other guys who are going to hold the younger players accountable in the locker room. We don't have that. Like, who's the leaders on the defense? It's Berry and Justin Houston, I guess. Berry's not around. Tom Bahali is another guy that's always been around, and he's just kind of, I mean, he's there. But is his attitude really affecting the team if he's not playing? I mean, what's he played, 30 snaps on the season? Like, I don't know how effective he can be as a leader. DJ's always been a very quiet guy, and his play is slipping. I don't know if people are going to take words from him anymore. Like, I see a breakdown in leadership in the locker room where Andy likes players to control themselves like that. Like, that's, I think, why he's so liked, because he lets the players handle it themselves. And they're not doing a good job of it, so he's had to step in and try and regain control of the locker room.
So, team leadership is one of the things that I wanted to talk about today.
We had a great tweet back and forth, a big group thread conversation going on Twitter. Me and Craig Stout, who was back on Twitter, and Joe Dice, that's his name, right? Pulse of the Chiefs. a couple other guys thrown in there, but just a really great open discussion on what we all thought was going wrong, and not, you know, getting mad at people for their opinions and whatever, just people trying to figure out what the hell's going on. So go back and read that if you want to. It's kind of hard to follow, probably.
The biggest thing for me, you know, I think that what you're seeing was kind of perfectly encapsulated by a tweet that you sent. And everybody tried to put their own words to what they saw when Marcus got pissed off and threw the flag into the stands. But you essentially said, we are all Marcus Peters right now. I've thrown everything in my vicinity. And I don't know how to address, like, holding players to a higher standard. I don't. I mean, I could say that... I could say that I expect a guy that's playing the game to know better than to react that way on the field. But then, if I actually look at it, it's like... I don't know if I would have done the same thing or not. Maybe I would have. At 24, in that situation with those stakes, yeah, I very well could have done that.
Well,
and I mean,
there's been tons of players throughout NFL history that have been in, you know, similar situations and restrained themselves. Now obviously Peters is on the, you know, emotional extreme of players,
sure.
And that's how you saw it. But I mean, it is part of his job to retain those emotions for better or worse.
Yeah.
Like we're all fans at home. We don't have a job to do when it comes to the Chiefs. Like, he part of his job is to keep his cool on the field and do what's best for the team.
Sorry, guys. Got new cat at home.
Damn, they didn't like that opinion.
Yeah. I didn't like it.
Take it back. Take it back.
Look, man. I mean, as far as overall leadership on the team is concerned, I don't disagree with you that, you know, Andy probably wants the players to police themselves, for lack of a better explanation. And not having Eric Berry has hurt them on the field and in the locker room. I guess I just, like... I don't think that this is a matter of the Chiefs have too many personalities or now they need to go and get some choir boys or whatever. It's not... This isn't a matter of extremes, you know? But I do think that they need someone that is a vocal leader, and it can't just be like, I don't think it can be Derek Johnson come to work every day kind of guy. Like, I think they need to have more than Eric Berry, because if I had to, you know, tell you who the second most vocal guy is in the locker room or in the huddles or at practice or whatever outside of Eric Berry, like, I quite literally don't know. And so if I can't identify who that player is that could rally people around or whatever at this point without Eric Berry, I mean, I think that in and of itself is maybe a problem. But the bigger thing to me is that, like, seriously, man, winning cures everything. And the Chiefs have lost so many games in a row and so many really just in this stretch here that, you know, you can say that you're upset with Marcus the way that he's, like, reacting or belittling his teammates on the field. And you did admit that, like, Kelsey's doing the same thing. I mean, I think you're seeing it in small spats. It's happening a lot more with Marcus. But you're seeing this with other guys, and whether you think it's guys checking out or what, like, I guess I'm not in any way trying to down, like, I said that I thought Marcus should be suspended, all right? So, like, let's just establish that although I am a huge Marcus Peters fan, and by all accounts an apologist, I'm not trying to demean or whatever, I'm not trying to take down his actions, I'm not trying to minimize them. I guess I think that the same message, and I don't know if this is just what we should all expect, but the message that we keep getting from Andy, and it sounds like from a lot of the players that have had a microphone pushed in their face while they're in their bathroom, is all of the answers are in this room. We can't turn on each other. We have to stay together. And because of the, if it's not this, it's that, it seems to be always something new. Like, and I think that they're all frustrated, and maybe Kelsey or maybe Marcus, maybe those guys are the most likely to point fingers, whether it be quietly or loudly. I'm absolutely certain that guys are probably feeling divided in that locker room. And I don't think that suspending Marcus Peters is an answer to that. Now, if you think that because the team lacks leadership and Andy's saying, okay, now I have to step in, I mean, whatever, I trust Andy Reid. Like, I think Marcus needed to be suspended because I don't think that Marcus has been valuing the opportunity to play this game, because he loves football too much to be playing it the way that he's been playing. And I know that he's pissed off at the other guys on the field, but like, how many truly elite players in this league are not leaders on their football team? That's the biggest problem for me, is that if Marcus, as one of the best players at his position, one of the most recognizable players in the NFL, if he's not going to step up and be a leader, that is a problem.
I don't know if he necessarily has to be a leader. And he might be a leader. And that might be the problem, that he's leading a group of players, you know, in a sort of revolt against the coaches, you would assume, right?
I mean, I don't know. Like, I don't think that...
Like, that's taking it too far.
Right.
But if he's blaming everything on Bob Sutton, like, hey, we suck because of Bob Sutton. And they talk about that every week. And, you know, I kind of draw... I mean, he chewed Bob Sutton out that week. He looks at the sideline and throws his arms up in disgust. Presumably at Bob Sutton, right?
I mean, maybe, I don't know, but like, I have never looked at that thing, him arguing with his coach, as like, this is just such a huge problem, because I've seen so many guys do it that have so much respect. And generally speaking, the guys that are willing to yell at their coaches, if you look at the common denominator of the guys that you've seen yelling at their coaches, it's the guys that know. And whether they think it's a problem or it's disrespectful or whatever, I mean, who are the guys, like the people that you remember yelling at coaches and it's been a big deal in the media? Tom Brady. T.O.?
Yeah.
I don't remember him yelling at coaches on the sideline, but...
Yelling at Greg Roman, the 49ers offensive coordinator?
I don't remember it.
Yeah, he... I mean, it's one of the worst.
I'm not saying it didn't happen.
No, yeah.
I mean, the guys that are coming to mind to me, and I'm not trying to just frame this conversation a certain way, because I know that T.O. was considered a problem, I guess. Yeah. Phenomenal player, but an asshole. But, I mean, I remember Todd Haley and Larry Fitzgerald getting after it badly. And, I mean, you can say that Todd Haley's divisive, but, like, we're talking about Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
You know, and you're talking about Tom Brady. And the one thing that people have always said about Marcus Peters is how smart he is football-wise, how well he knows the game. And so I'm just looking at these guys with football IQ that are willing to get into it with their coaches, and it's the heat of the moment. And don't get me wrong, Marcus had to be pulled away from the situation, and Tom Brady has never had to be separated.
You think it's just the heat of the moment?
I mean...
I guess that would be the...
It's the only time that we've seen it happen, you know? That's not to say that it hasn't happened anywhere else.
I feel like I haven't seen these things out of Peters until that game where he yelled at Sutton, and since then.
Well, and I don't know. Maybe that's, again, maybe it's not having Barry. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's Houston stepping in. And you can see that maybe Andy's saying, look, like, we've done what we can to try to keep him in check, but it's not working with our players for whatever reason. And maybe it's just this season or whatever. But, you know, Andy's decided that he needed to step in and do something about it. And I don't know if... I don't like all the auxiliary places that this conversation can go, because I think that so many people have an opinion about Marcus Peters that has very little to do with football. And I know that that's not going to happen, like, between you and I.
Yeah. Well, Marcus Peters has been politicized, and, you know, my views on politics are essentially the people on both ends suck.
Yeah.
And the people in the middle are all, you know, trying to fight it out. But people on the extremes of both sides are, they came off like complete idiots, I thought, in both sides of the discussion with when it came to Marcus Peters. Like when the takes were just flying out, you know, immediately following on Sunday, I thought both extremes sounded like idiots, but there's a reasonable conversation to be had. I thought Andy admitting that he talked to the leaders in the locker room about the decision was kind of interesting. Why would he, Andy, who says very little to the media, you know, doesn't really disclose what happens behind closed doors, not a fan of that, openly admits that he discussed this with the leaders in the locker room.
But it wasn't before. I mean, that's what Alex said was, you know, Andy had already made the decision and he let me know before he told you guys, essentially.
Okay.
So I don't think it was, let's put five guys in a room and take a poll. Like, it was, I'm deciding to do this and I want you guys to know before finding out on Twitter or okay. whatever.
Okay, that's interesting.
So let me ask you this. Is there... I know how much you love Andy Reid, and I'm not trying to separate myself from that. Obviously, I love Andy Reid, too. Is it possible that Andy Reid is a really brilliant coach, and in so many respects, like, one of the best head coaches, not in the league right now, but maybe ever?
Top 10 all-time wins, yeah.
But also, like, a very flawed coach, and that we're seeing some of this. Maybe it's because he's getting older or the players are changing or what. But, like, let me ask you this. I mean, why has Andy Reid handed over play calling twice in the past three seasons?
I don't know. Maybe just blaming himself, holding himself accountable. I mean, remember when he did it in 2015, we were all skeptical. None of us really thought that he was calling the plays. And then there's kind of reports that Peterson was calling, like, the two-minute, yeah, like, plays, like, in the two-minute drill.
Mm-hmm. Or, like, specifically in the red zone stuff. It was really weird how it was, like, compartmentalized. But
I think it's collaborative, like, before and after. I'm not sure if anything changed.
Mm-hmm.
I do remember, like, in that Giants game, I mean, him and Nagy were, like, huddled up before series started. And it was like, I mean, my thoughts at the time were, what plays can we call for Alex to succeed in this win? Like, and they're just having to, you know, dive deep into the playbook to find plays that could work.
I've given never the conditions. Given, like, any credence to the wind at all. Like, that does not register to me even one bit. But that's, man's opinion. I mean, I don't think that Eli was having an especially difficult time throwing the ball.
He has a much stronger arm.
I'm just saying,
he had like five passes that landed 5 yards in front of the receiver.
Yeah, and Alex has been playing terrible.
He hasn't, like, done that in a single other game.
I don't know. It's not worth, like, arguing about the wind. I'm just saying.
No,
like,
that's a weird stance to have.
I just didn't think it was an issue.
Okay. I don't know what the handing over play calling. I don't know what it entails. I think it's collaborative beforehand and after.
I ask that just because it's like, I think that Andy's pretty self-aware, right? I mean, you have to be at this level, you would think. I mean, maybe some of these guys are such egomaniacs that, like, I could never do anything wrong. But, I mean, I think Andy has been trying different things. And I look at what the results were on Sunday, and I'm not trying to blow it out of proportion, but, like, Andy says, basically, like, I'm going to hand over play calling duties. And don't get me wrong, if you want to look at the scripted 15 or something and the fact that the Chiefs were up 14-0 before that script was probably done. I mean, it took us 7 offensive plays to score the first 14 points or something along those lines. I mean, I guess I just look at it, and the huge difference, and I don't know if this is just based upon who we were playing or what their talents are or what, but the huge difference was going from not throwing a ball over 20 yards against Buffalo to throwing, like, 7 of them.
More than 11, I think.
In the game against the Jets, and it's just like, you know...
Do you know why?
I don't.
Because the other teams played zone and the Jets played man-to-man for some reason. When all these teams are playing zone and shutting the Chiefs down, and the Jets, I don't know if it's because the Chiefs beat them in zone a couple times early in the game, and so the Jets went back to maybe they're just more comfortable in man-to-man. But the Jets played more man-to-man than the teams have the last 3 weeks, and it was just completely idiotic.
I don't know.
Andy definitely has flaws. What are you saying the flaws are?
Well, I'm asking if, because from 1 week to the next, there are so many problems, if we can point any fingers at coaching.
Well, definitely. I mean, if this is the product, yeah. I mean,
and so that's where I wonder. And like, I would never advocate for firing Andy Reid, but like, I mean, let's say even if the Chiefs weather this thing and they win if they win the next two games, they're essentially going to win the division.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, for all intents and purposes,
they have to lose the next two, I think, and have, I think, either the Raiders or Chargers win the next last two or last three.
I would think that, yeah, either the Raiders or the Chargers have to go 3-1. If the Chiefs win the next two, they would have to lose to Miami and Denver, and the Raiders and Chargers could only lose to the Chiefs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, either way, it's just, who knows what the results are going to be, but, like, even if the Chiefs make the playoffs, like, there have to be changes that are made on the coaching staff in this offseason, and I don't know if some changes in personnel and some changes in coaching are going to, like, fix it. And I'm not saying that removing Andy Reid is the issue. And I'm not trying to blow all this out of proportion because there's so many weird things. This team is...
I don't think we can blow anything out of proportion for the Chiefs right now. I think everything is on the table.
Including firing Andy Reid?
No, no.
Well, I'm just saying, you know...
like
that, there are people that are talking about firing Andy Reid.
Well, obviously.
And whether I'm saying that
people were talking about firing Andy Reid last year.
Right. So I guess I'm just... I'm wondering if things have gotten out of control more because of coaching than because of players or what. I don't know because, and I don't think that it's as simple as we're gonna get rid of Andy Heck this off season or something and get a new offensive line coach and poof, we're gonna be good again.
No, like, I think Sutton's fitting to be the scapegoat. Wouldn't you think? If the Chiefs don't make the playoffs, I would imagine Bob Sutton is fired.
I think so, but that's primarily because the defense has only had like a couple good games. But I have to tell you, man, I genuinely think that he has just as many problems, if not more, based on like a talent level issue on defense as it is just schematically. And don't get me wrong, there are things definitely that we can identify and say, you should be doing X, Y, and Z. We think that he should.
Yeah.
But I think that he's got some major talent flaws on defense,
too, definitely,
that he's trying to navigate. So, I mean, scapegoat's probably the right word.
Yeah.
If I can, real quick.
Go ahead.
Did you see the article that Mike Pettine was in town this week?
I saw it circulating this week. It was from last year, I believe.
Was it?
Yeah.
Huh.
But somebody also said he spent time with him this season or something. I don't know.
Well, it's basically like he doesn't have a job right now.
Yeah.
And so he's just kind of networking and whatever. And
I mean, he's connected to Andy Reid, but Andy Reid has tons of connections. Like, there's going to be choices for a defensive coordinator if we choose to fire some.
Yeah, and it's also that he was the DC in New York over Sutton for a few years,
like before. Beneath Rex, yep, and above Sutton.
Yep, and then he took and the Bills coach job.
Got benched or whatever. I can't think of the fuck. Demoted.
Because
he was D coordinator, then he got demoted down to linebackers coach and like assistant.
Interesting.
Head coach.
Well, I mean, so
Pettine might have taken over.
When Pettine ran the Jets defense, like, they were essentially top five in either yards or scoring or both, like all 3 years that he was in charge of their defense. He was basically their defensive coordinator during the Sanchez years when they went to all these AFC title games, despite having Mark Sanchez.
Yeah.
And he got two head coaching jobs.
Mike Pettine did?
Yeah, he's the Bills Browns. And the Browns.
He was a Bills head coach?
I think for like a year. Yeah.
I do not remember.
It's really weird.
The Bills have had a lot of coaches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They have. I mean, so have the Browns. But he's just...
No, they found their answer. Hugh Jackson's the guy.
So, I mean, I thought that that was at least mildly interesting.
Also, I think there's definitely a talent question. I think the talent pool has been swung towards the offense.
And the finances still haven't.
No. But because we're still paying older guys. We're still paying Houston a ton, Barry a ton, Tamba a ton, DJ a ton. I mean, we're only getting results out of one of those guys right now.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
You're paying Parker quite a bit, Alan Bailey. There's some mid-level contracts. And these are guys that aren't stepping up as, like, the secondary leaders I'm talking about, by the way. Like, Ron Parker and Alan Bailey needed to be that next wave of guys. And I don't think they're flashing any leadership.
Like, role players, you know?
Well, so are Hussein Abdullah and Mike DeVito.
Yeah,
like, these guys aren't, they don't have to be the best players, but I think they are important voices. I think. I mean, obviously, we don't know. And also, Therese would like to hammer home that Dontari Poe was the leader in the defensive line group. And let's face it, the defensive line, I'm not saying we're missing Poe necessarily as...
Oh, I heard somebody, and I don't know who it was, but like, who was it? I think it was Bill Moss. I hate Bill Moss. We've gone over that. But he was talking about how, like, that's the biggest change on the defense this year is not having Dontari Poe, and like that's the biggest problem. And I'm like, dude, okay, man, sounds good.
I mean, I think Benny Logan's about the same, probably a little bit better. He doesn't rush the passer at all. Is one problem. None of our pass rushers are getting the job done. Let's start there.
None of them.
And you know, maybe that's not having Poe in there to motivate. I don't even believe that.
All right, let's hang on. Let's do this. In order to like try to maybe close the door a little bit on the Peters thing.
I got a lot more Peters stuff.
You got a lot more.
Let's revisit it later.
Okay. I have this thing that's like brewing in my mind about Marcus Peters.
All right.
You guys are going to enjoy.
All right.
Thomas tweets on Sunday.
Yeah, I saw him. I didn't pay too much attention.
I mean, it was we're going to stay together. We got to stay together. We're going to turn it around. I hope you guys are along for the ride because we're going to do it. I promise. I guarantee it.
I don't understand what's happening with Tamba.
Did we just buy anything that comes out of Tamba's telephone at this point, I guess? I mean, he's going to play on Sunday. He's going to start on Sunday. And I don't know like how many reps you're going to get from him, but you know, you're talking about, we still don't know. I don't think Daddy's going to play this year.
Probably not.
But it's him and Passanio, I guess. I mean, they're going to try to do everything they can, I think, to keep Zombo off the field, potentially. I don't know.
How about this? Put one good pass rusher on the field. Just one. That's all I want to see. Like, let me see a pressure. A pressure.
Oh, well, I guarantee that Seth will tell you all about how Justin Houston's pressuring the quarterback, but it's the secondary's fault.
Yeah. Like, I got some problems with Justin Houston.
I think that the secondary and the pass rush work together, as we've discussed ad nauseum on this program, and I don't think that either one is doing its job.
I think the pass rush has been worse than the secondary, actually.
And that's what
I think. I look at it like every member of the Chiefs secondary has gotten worse since last year. Ron Parker's doing nothing this season. Steven Nelson got torched on Sunday. Just torched. Like, I felt like that was worse than some of Gaines' games. Some of Gaines' worst games.
Nelson had a bad day, but so did future Hall of Famer Darrell Revis. we'll get to him.
So, he's been playing a lot on Sunday. We can't just shelf him again.
I think...
Mitchell wasn't great. Like, all these guys have gotten worse since last... Peters has had a down year since last year. I think it's the pass rush. Like, I think they're just all being exploited because of the lack of pass rush. And
absolutely.
So I think that's where my number one problem with the team is right now, is the lack of pass rush. And the problem is, that's where we have guys who we think are good. Like, we've kind of discussed this a few times, but we like these players. Why aren't the results there? We like Chris Jones. People like Alan Bailey. I'm not crazy about him. We like Benny Logan. I like him, but I don't think he does much pass rushing. People say Justin Houston is playing well. I don't see it. don't see. He's supposed to be the leader of the pass rush. There's nothing. Zombo, I guess, if you want to blame him some, but I mean, Zombo's like gotten more pressures than just about anybody, it seems like to me.
To be honest.
Tamba, he's gone. I mean, he's just, I mean, he can't play on turf. So I think that could be an issue going forward. Like, we like these guys, but they're not getting the job done. None of them are getting the job done. So where's the problem?
I think
all
that,
of them?
So, like, the biggest thing for me is that, you know, when we say that you're supposed to work together, every once in a while you'll get a coverage sack. But, like,
We had one against the Bills, I remember, because I was like, Tyron, throw the fucking ball away. And that was one of our, what, six sacks over the last 7 weeks, I think it is?
Yeah, same number of losses as we have. One sack for every loss.
Whoa.
I guess I just look at it, and to me, especially against the Jets, and look, I did not, like, sit down and watch that game in all 22 and blah, 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 blah. This is amateur hour, all right? I watched the game.
Hey, I did that before.
In my bed and tried to enjoy it like a normal Chiefs fan. And what I saw was McCown buying more time and running around and making guys miss.
He looked great.
And extending plays.
I can't believe how good he was.
And I'm like, I can't ask my corners and safeties to cover guys for 6 or 7 seconds. And don't get me wrong,
it'd be nice if they didn't tackle their receiver, you know, every other play. That would be nice.
I know that there are,
because like I get mad at these holding calls, and then they show a replay, and Nelson just, you know, has both arms around the receiver, like, oh yeah, yeah, that is a legitimate pen holding call. Nelson, dear God,
he had a tough day. He had a tough day. So, how about
and this? We're getting torched by Josh McCown, who's on his, I think it's 19th professional football team, if you include his stint in Canada and in the Mexican football leagues. He actually played soccer down there.
McCown's been good this year.
He has. And, you know, the names aren't big, but they're decent. I'll give him that. But Robbie Anderson and Jermaine Kearse should not just be torching
the two highest rated wide receivers by PFF this
year. Yes, yeah. Should not just be torching your secondary over and over again. That was kind of ridiculous.
So, I think that Darrell Revis should just go ahead and retire again.
You think that was it?
I mean, no, but I think it should be. He was dreadful.
Bad enough that I questioned if he was actually a Jets double spy. Because they're showing him miss the tackle, then they're talking like, Darrell Revis getting paid $6 million this year by the Jets. And I was like, wait a second. He's playing for us against the Jets while being paid for the Jets.
Yeah.
Kind of a lifelong Jet, or at least had two stints with the Jets. Like, is this guy sabotaging the game?
I mean, I don't think that Revis had enough of an impact to sabotage the game, but one thing that we've also seen that the defense is not doing, they're not forcing turnovers, man. And I think the biggest thing with that, again, it goes back to the pass rush. Like, you have to make the quarterback uncomfortable.
I haven't seen a quarterback uncomfortable against us in months.
Yes, it's
months. Since it was too cold for Derek Carr.
So,
and that wasn't this year.
Well, and it's not going to be.
It's not?
It's supposed to
be. You checked the weather? I was wondering that.
I did. I looked at it, and we have like a 50% chance of snow on Friday, but then it's supposed to be like 55 or 60.
Oh!
I mean, who knows? Weather guys,
he's going to have a horrible walkthrough on Saturday, though.
Yeah.
Horrible. He's going to be air throws, just checking it down with no pressure whatsoever. Dude, we have no pass rush, and the way that we beat the Raiders is by rushing three against their dominant offensive line. We're going to see Derek Carr, you know, if he's smart, sit back there for like 20 seconds to play and just make a sandwich before finding an open receiver.
I don't think it will take that long, given the guys that are going to be playing in coverage.
It's possible. Man, this week could go either way. Like,
they're going to win. The Chiefs are going to win without Peters on the field, and it's just going to, like, give all of these dumbasses that think we don't need Marcus Peters on the team more ammunition to say that. Are the Chiefs going to trade Marcus Peters?
Well, I think that's a large part of the discussion.
Headed in that direction right now.
How's he going to handle the suspension?
I don't know. I mean, I said take...
That's a big deal, him missing the Raiders game.
Can you
like, imagine? It's a big deal him missing a game, but him getting suspended for the Raiders... I can't imagine he's a happy camper at this moment.
Can you imagine if he's at the game? And can you imagine...
At the game.
The circumstances of how... Of all the different possible ways he could be at the game.
I've got one.
Could he, like, be on the Raiders sideline?
Can we get Peter's... On the Raiders sideline.
With like a Groucho Marx mask
and
on.
This guy's like Bobby Valentine.
Yes.
Who is that?
Great minds think alike. I mean, I'm just... If it was like really cold and he could put on like a ski mask and then you wouldn't know.
He's got Sean Smith over there. He's got Marshawn Lynch. You gotta think those are two better friends than he has on the Chiefs sideline.
Yeah, probably. I mean,
I think a big part of it with Peters. Do we want to get back to Peters?
I mean, that's
like
we got there naturally.
We have to decide if we're going to pay him huge money. Like that's the decision looming over all of this. Like, I don't care about the acts that he does. I care about the attitude, but that can be fixed. If he's leading some sort of revolt against Bob Sutton.
I don't think that's happening.
I mean, revolt is too strong a word, but I don't know what the correct word is.
I mean, you're thinking of
a coup?
You're thinking of like mutiny or whatever.
Well, yeah, but it's not that strong. It's just like them gossiping in the locker room that Bob Sutton sucks.
So then,
as soon as things start to suck, they're all like, "Bob Sutton sucks, so why am I out here playing my ass off?"
Well, I mean, that's kind of what most of social media says is that Bob Sutton sucks. So a few guys in the locker room...
Like, I think Bob Sutton sucks.
So well, then, what are you worried about it for?
Look, well, no, because that doesn't... What if he does it to the next coordinator? He might just be, like, unable to be coached.
I mean, maybe. But that's the risk that you run. And we will quite literally never know. We won't know if he can't be coached.
I think we'll get a good understanding if we fire Sutton, bring in a new coordinator, and see how that goes. I think we'll get a better understanding, at least.
I mean, maybe, but that's also...
I think that's... And that's...
It's so predicated upon the other guys that are on the field with him. If Marcus Peters is the best player on every team, and don't get me wrong, Marcus Peters is great, but I don't think that Marcus Peters is, like, built in such a way that there can't be other guys on a defense that are at, you know, playing at his level. And with that being the case, like, if the Chiefs just don't get good on defense and they continue to have Marcus Peters and then, like, a bunch of schmucks, potentially, he's not going to be happy. It doesn't matter who his coach is. I mean, that's the problem, is that Marcus Peters feels like, I'm playing at this level and you guys are playing down here at this other level, and yes, that's why he's pissed off.
Yes.
Like, that's why he's acting out and throwing his tantrums on the field.
Agreed. Totally agree.
Because he thinks he's doing his job and other guys aren't.
Totally agree.
And I'm sure that there are a number of ways that he would show you in X's and O's, I'm doing what I'm being asked to do, and this guy doesn't know the plays. Or this guy, you know, crossed routes with this other person. I mean,
I agree. But that's not the best attitude to be blaming others. And he might be right.
I'm not saying...
But it's still not the best attitude.
But I think that... I don't know what the right way to handle that is, because...
I don't think... Well,
it's not necessarily like you either go at your teammates or you don't. It's a matter of if he thinks, Bob, look at what is happening and it's not working, and whether Bob isn't doing something about it or Brett Veach isn't doing something about it. I mean, I don't know, because it feels like they're throwing everything at a wall to see what sticks. Darrelle Revis was the... fourth or fifth corner to start a game opposite Marcus Peters this season.
Revolving door.
I mean, they're trying. They absolutely are. So I don't think that Peters is out of line for thinking that guys aren't doing their job. But, I mean, I'm not saying he's handling it the right way.
And he's also, but, it's also, I guess I would argue that attitude is affecting his play.
I think it is.
Because what else would be?
Right. I mean, I think he's pretty unhappy. And I think that he may be overall just unhappy here because of fan reaction to him.
No, I think that's a big part of it. I think anything's on the table for Peters this offseason. I wouldn't shock me in the least to see him demand a trade.
I think they...
In the least. I wouldn't shock me at all to see the Chiefs trade him. Because they have to decide if they're going to pay him, you know, what's it going to take to keep him? $80 million?
So here's the conversation that I've heard a few people having. And I don't want to not give folks credit, but I don't remember who it is. But I've seen a few different people talking about it.
Chiefs fans?
No,
it's... 69?
It could be 69, 420. That's, you could be. No, I think it's like Josh Briscoe and maybe Speck a little bit too. But like, it's not a matter of do you pay Marcus Peters? The conversation is how much are you willing to? It's not whether or not you keep him. Like, is Marcus Peters worth it, quote unquote? The answer is yes, but the conversation is how much when it comes time. And I think that the Chiefs may decide how much is he worth to someone else rather than how much is he worth to us or whatever. I mean, I would say, obviously I love Marcus Peters. I don't want him to go anywhere. I would in no way be surprised if they went into this offseason and had some team offer them. I mean, come on. You're not getting less than a first-round pick for Marcus Peters, right?
I would hope not.
You know? And so I think that if you get a first and some other conditional pick that could be a second, third, fourth rounder, if they basically just get their first back for Peters that they gave up to get Mahomes, I think that they would do it.
You think?
I mean, I don't want them to.
I think teams would be lined up at the door to give... Wow. Yeah, I think teams would be lined up at the door to give Peters for a first-round pick.
I mean, so, and here's the thing, is like, people continue to speculate about, like, him wanting to play in Oakland, but the Raiders only have...
They're moving!
They only have one season left there.
This year and the next year.
Right, so, I mean, and I don't know if Marshawn will be there next year, but, like, what would it take from Oakland? Like, what
for Oakland to trade for him?
What would Oakland have to offer the Chiefs for the
Sean
Chiefs to
Smith.
Say, okay... Not what would
Khalil Mack.
I mean, seriously, like, if you're talking about
trading, I'll take Mack
to a division,
I'll do
rival,
it straight up.
I mean, I would too, but I don't think Oakland would do that.
No, not a chance. Not a chance.
I'm talking about in terms of like, if you are Brett Veach and the Raiders are, you know, the only suitor, they may not know that, but like, what does it take? You know, it takes more. Because it's the Raiders.
No, yeah, I don't even think it's an option. I don't think that's on the table. I keep saying that everything's on the table and then taking things off the table. I realize right. that, but, yeah. You know, I got a weird table.
Yeah.
I got a weird table. It's a lazy Susan.
Okay. Well, I
do think a point you made is very important. Like, the outcry to him protesting the anthem has led to, you know, however many Chiefs fans condemning Marcus Peters, and I think he's taken note of it. Like, he's very aware of it, I think.
The thing that sucks about it, though, man, is, like, name a city in the country out of the 30 that have football teams that wouldn't have people that react that way, especially vocally on social media.
Well, every I think it's city. Strongest. Maybe the problem is the media. And by the media, I mean...
I feel like
the
Kansas City media has gone out of their way to try to write
people
positive
that,
stories because
people
I've
that
seen,
we follow, people that we follow.
Correct. I think.
That, but who's the biggest voice in Kansas City right now? Is it still Keatsman?
I don't know. I mean, how could it not be guys that like Mellinger and Therese? I mean, doesn't the paper have more circulation than 810? I could be wrong, but both of them.
I don't know anymore.
I don't either. I mean, you would have thought it was Danny. When he was here. I mean, certainly for us, but some of that is age group.
Yeah.
You know,
So there's definitely a faction that is following Keatsman's words.
Right.
Essentially.
But I think...
And other guys on 810. I don't even know who the guys are on 810 anymore.
I could be wrong. Oh, it's been the same guys on 810 for like 15 years.
Yeah, I guess.
I shouldn't
say
anymore.
Like, I never knew.
There you go.
I do listen to Seren Petro, and he's okay.
Wouldn't...
Because you said he's okay. He is okay.
Yeah, he's okay. He really likes baseball.
Well, he's not that.
Wouldn't you think...
We all have our faults.
Yeah. Wouldn't you think that, like, the people that listen to 810, and I'm not trying to, you know, point fingers, but let's just be honest. Are. It's like...
Whenever people say that, that means they are trying to point fingers.
It's the demographic for most 810 listeners is probably like 45 to 65.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you think that those are the people that read the newspaper, too? Like, yeah, they're more prone to read the paper?
And I mean, and Therese has definitely gone out of his way.
Mellinger has been balanced on it. He's condemned him, but he clearly likes him, and both of them have gone and like written stories about Marcus Peters went and did this. Marcus bought the kid the Jordans, and the mom was crying.
Yeah, you're seeing all these types of stories, a whole bunch of them.
Because you know, and I think that's their reaction.
Reaction to
some
what?
Of the negative press that Peters gets, and so they're like, "Well, let me tell you the real story about him."
Yeah,
you know,
and so maybe Peters is just focused. I mean, people do. There's people. You know, Republicans will just follow the, you know, liberal media just so they can get mad at things, and vice versa.
Sure.
And so maybe Peters is just kind of like that. Maybe he's just, you know, singling out voices mm-hmm. like Kevin Keatsman and taking it to heart. But I mean, I do think that he is feeling the animosity from the Kansas City crowd. And I think it's, I think, you said what city would that not be in? I think it's elevated in the Midwest.
I mean, maybe I think that there are stupid people everywhere.
Oh, definitely.
And I know that, like,
but wouldn't it be like, I mean, people. This is definitely stereotyping, but conservatives would be the ones that are mad at Marcus Peters
for sure. But that's the thing is that I think people look at it and they tend to assume that, like, once you get to the coasts, it's more liberal and maybe they're going to be more accepting of what Marcus is doing or whatnot. Yeah. But like, I don't buy that.
Really?
I don't, because there are old, stupid white men in every city in America.
No, well, yeah, but less.
I don't know. Maybe.
Florida, there's probably some.
There's plenty in the South. I mean, I guess I just.
But he played in like, I think he'd be more accepted in like Seattle, Los Angeles.
I could see Oakland. Seattle. I
knew I don't know if I want to go East Coast.
Maybe West Coast. I could. I don't know. I don't know, man. I mean, you know what the best place for him would be? The Chargers, because they don't have fans and nobody cares.
Mm.
There you go. No uprising.
You just want to trade him in the division, don't you?
No, I don't. I would trade him for Casey Hayward. Give me Casey Hayward.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean,
could have had him for free, pretty much.
Could have. If we had Casey Hayward, Marcus Peters would not be upset.
If I was a GM right now, we'd have Casey Hayward.
Yeah, and Zach Brown.
And Zach Brown.
We'd be good.
And Mike Glennon.
And Mike Glennon.
And Chase
Taylor. And not Pat Mahomes. We'd have Deshaun Watson.
Yes!
Injured. Speaking of injured, let's talk about the offense a little bit.
Okay.
Mitch Morris got hurt on Sunday, and I think that everybody was like, hey, all right, Parker, now he's actually inactive today. I don't know if Parker Anger's going to be active or not on Sunday. I don't know if Mitch Morse is going to be active or not on Sunday. But I think it doesn't matter. I think that Parker Anger and Brian Witzman and Zach Fulton and maybe even Mitch Morse, maybe?
Well, okay, so
they don't matter that much.
Something we didn't get to last week that I thought was interesting. Brandon Kiley tweeted out some stats of, like, the Chiefs running game the first 5 weeks of the season, both mm-hmm. this year and last year. Remember when Spencer Ware was the
NFL
unanimous NFL MVP?
Yeah.
I do. I know I do. So we kind of equated
I
that.
I know I do.
I have the plaque and everything. Never got to hand it to him. So, you know, we kind of blamed that on Anger's absence, or at least that was the correlation that we saw last year, was like Anger, you know, got hurt, and then the running game fell off a cliff.
And we talked about the concussion potentially to Ware, too.
Okay, yeah.
He, like, get his bell rung, but I thought, maybe.
Seeing the exact same pattern over the last 2 years kind of changed my tune on that, I guess I would say.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
Yeah, and I don't understand, other than Andy revolutionizes his running game every offseason, and then it gets figured out, you know, relatively quickly.
Maybe, man,
I don't, but I don't know. What would be the explanation for that?
You said that you don't listen to the Star podcast that much. I'll tell you this. Therese hammers the offensive line and says that
I hate the offensive line.
He thinks the biggest problem is in coaching because, and he showed it a couple ways. He's talking about like what guys' responsibilities are on a given play because of the zone scheme that they run. And it was basically like, you've got, I think it was the game that they decided to start Fulton over Witzman. So let's say that's the Giants game, right? We all hoped that we would see anger that week, and
yeah, the
change
bye.
We saw was Zach Fulton.
Yes.
Therese talked everybody through a play where, based on seeing what, like how the line moved, like this is his responsibility, and the defensive lineman that's lined up in between Mitch Morse and Tardif was the person that Zach Fulton was supposed to be able to reach and block. They had all of their guys moving that far drastically that way.
Uh-huh.
And that guy got upfield and tackled Hunt for a 3-yard loss. And we see that like every single week. And he's talked about, he's like, these guys, I mean, even he's, especially you look at Zach Fulton, and Zach Fulton doesn't move well in space. And I think that the team knows that. But if 4 out of the 5 do, then screw it. But
which might work better if he's the center, because the center doesn't move as much as guards.
I mean, potentially, but
I'm reaching.
He has said, like, if this were my team, Zach Fulton would be playing center.
Huh.
But Therese talks a lot about
and
how...
What do you do with Morse?
I don't know. I think he hasn't really said, like, I'd move Morse to guard. It's almost like maybe he just wouldn't have him. But Therese wants to play power football. He wants 340-pound offensive linemen out there, and like, I'm just going
to... Running pass routes?
This is what we do. We're going to do this, and good luck trying to stop us. And the first 2 to maybe 3 seasons of Andy Reid...
Well, do you remember your research back in the day?
I thought that's what he wanted to do.
Because you did research, and it was basically like every offensive lineman under Andy, or maybe just his good lines or what he ended up with or something, but they were like all over 330 pounds or something.
When he was in Philadelphia, like the average weight of an offensive lineman, starting offensive lineman for him during his head coaching tenure in Philly was like over 320 pounds. And where it seemed odd is because we were playing guys like Rodney Hudson, who was only listed at like 290, and Eric Fisher got drafted at 305. And some of those guys have gotten bigger.
So you'll see Tardif 321.
Yep.
Schwartz Fulton 316. Schwartz 320. I mean, these are big guys.
Right. They're not.
Fisher 315.
I don't think they're like small anymore.
Morse 305.
So, I mean, it's not, you know, you're not looking
Witzman,
at.
Witzman 320. I mean, these are big boys.
Yeah. They're not like so especially why, small anymore.
But we got these big guys and they just can't power block.
That's really what Therese is saying. Like, we need to be running power instead of running all of these, like, stretch.
So he thinks they're capable of doing it? And they're misusing?
I don't think they're capable. He just says that, some of what they're asking the linemen to do, they're not capable of. And he thinks that they need to be trying to run more power, even if the guys aren't powerful enough. Like, can we just try to run downhill instead of always running sideways? And I think that people are irritated at, like, the play calling always going sideways. But, I mean, generally speaking, you assume that the coaches know what the team is capable of. I know that Andy Reid gets into some of these weird tendencies, like we saw with, you know, switching over to Nagy and finally throwing the ball downfield against the Jets. But that could be, like you said, that the Jets just played in man. And it's as simple as that. You joked about throwing to an offensive lineman.
I did.
Here's something interesting.
I got jokes.
Here's something for you to consider.
All right.
In the post game, Therese, they joked about things a little bit, but Therese was 100% serious when he said, "I think they need to move Cam Irving to tight end, and turn him into Jason Dunn," because he said that I guess Irving played tight end when he was in high school.
Cam Irving, 313.
He played tight end when he was in high school. He talked about how weird his body is and how it doesn't seem like he's suited to be an offensive lineman. And he's like, look, if you're going to have him drift out in a pass route because you think that he has good enough hands to be able to, like, catch the ball, essentially. I mean, he didn't play it very well, and it was some, you know, a weird trick play. Well, but he's like, he was talking about how he likes going to six offensive linemen, especially if you think you're weak up front, and essentially turned it into, like, make Cam Irving Jason Dunn.
Well, compared to our other tight ends, he looked fine going up for the ball, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't any different, like, than Ross Travis.
You said that, and I already think he's the second best tight end on our team. Like, yeah, I'm already convinced.
There you go.
My problem with the offensive line is we're already paying three of them, and everybody wants to pay Morse. So they're going to be paying four of these five guys, and they suck. How's that possible?
Yeah,
you can't be doing that. And maybe you're just blaming the past decisions, like paying Fisher. But I don't want to have all this money tied up on the offensive line and then still have them be a problem.
I would be really surprised if they ended up paying Mitch Morse.
You think he walks after this year?
I think right now, just because of, like, some injuries that have happened, and the fact that they already have money tied up, I think that they're going to let Fulton walk this offseason, and I think that Morse may be gone.
We, like, have him when for another year.
Yeah,
we have him for another year.
I think that, I don't know. I mean, I guess it depends on how much he wants. And I'm sure that Chiefs fans would be pretty frustrated to have had Rodney Hudson leave and sign one of the richest contracts for a center in NFL history and then draft his replacement. And everyone's like, who is this guy, other than the fact that he went to Missouri, and think that it's very weird that you're just going to start him at center and then he becomes a pretty good player and then maybe you let him walk too. I mean, it's not a great look, but they got to do something, man, because that line is a problem. But I don't know. I don't know that just replacing, like, the offensive line coach or whatever is
gonna... What's his name?
Andy Heck. What the heck?
That bothers me. That kind of offends me as a someone who doesn't like censorship. Yeah. I don't like the name Heck. Get that the fuck out of here.
Can we take a few minutes? We've been talking for about an hour. I don't know what else you...
Damn, have we already?
Yeah, I don't know what else you wanted to get to.
Well, I got a deep dive here on the game.
Okay.
I want to
talk about Tyreek real quick.
Tyreek had his career high in yards.
He was great.
185 yards. He's only had three games over 100 yards in his career. 185 yards, two touchdowns.
They basically couldn't cover him.
Nope.
And I think that most teams, for the most part, are not going to be able to. And, like, if he can have days like that with Alex Smith, I can't wait to watch him and Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
I cannot wait. Yep. To watch what Tyreek looks like with Mahomes. I mean, we talked about last week how it took him seven receptions to get to 41 yards or something against Buffalo. And I don't know how many catches did he have on Sunday? Seven,
six.
Probably. Six for 185.
Yep.
You know, like, he should have a 40-yard or more reception seemingly every game.
No doubt.
And I think that with Mahomes, like, you're going to see them make that a point of emphasis. Mm-hmm. And Tyreek is fully capable of
doing it. He almost had that one right before half, too. Very close to having that one. Nice catch. So that would have put him,
yeah,
like 220 or something.
I'm just...
230.
I think that...
I think teams are just playing zone, and if Alex sees that safety, you know, sitting way deep over the top on Tyreek, he doesn't throw it. And if he gets single high... And he's running a fly on the outside. He's been letting it go. And the Jets just idiotically played. Because even the one that they threw downfield to Tyreek against the Giants, they were in man. And they were not in man most of the day.
I think that we've just reached the point in the year where I don't care what Alex does. I don't want to watch him anymore.
Like, yeah. It wouldn't have just been easier if he played bad on Sunday, so we could just be like, it's Mahomes time!
I mean, that's what, like, everybody... I mean, I saw a couple people be like, man, I really wish Alex would have thrown the flag into the stands. Yeah. Like, can we just get him...
We're gonna get that Mahomes tryout in there.
I just...
Yeah, you can't really bench him after that game they had.
No, I mean, Alex is gonna finish the
it's
season.
It's fine, it's fine. Think. We got Mahomes on the horizon. Like, you may want to see him this four games, but he's starting week one next year.
Yeah, he is. I just, man, I don't want to wait that long. It's going to be...
Just look at it like this. If Mahomes came in and played bad, we'd, like all offseason, we'd be like, man, it was because the offense wasn't designed for him. We have to come with these excuses. But now it's just going to be like, Mahomes is about to light the NFL on fire. And we get to say that all offseason.
And I mean, hopefully we will. I think that...
The path is still there, by the way. I mean, if you're down, there's a few things. Hopefully Andy didn't lose control of the team, which is now in play.
That's so weird to think about.
Yeah. I didn't think it was possible, really. But, I mean, and maybe it's happened to him before in Philadelphia, if you want to say that, because, like, towards the end, things got pretty screwy, I guess. And maybe you think the talent on the team is a little bit overrated, like maybe we were all a little bit too excited, but it's still there. And we're going to have money soon. So we're going to have an ultra-talented offense, I would say, still. Even though the offensive line is maybe a question mark. But still, Young's talent at receiver and tight end and running back, and Mahomes coming in at quarterback. And then we're going to have money on top of it. Like, we're going to be able to fix our defense through free agency. Like, so the future is still bright for the team, is my point.
And I think one of the things that helps them is that, like, where it's been so interesting the last few years, and in some ways it's worked out in their favor, and in other ways it hasn't, is that, you know, we saw this draft model from Dorsey that he was drafting guys a year before he needed them to be ready, and so it sort of gave them a way to be able to develop and be brought along slowly. And, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Veach tries to do that a little bit. I mean, the team essentially did that with Passanio and Dee Ford, and I don't know if either of those guys are going to be good or what. But I think that what stands in the Chiefs' favor as far as free agency and the draft is concerned is, like, they're going to walk into next season, or basically the beginning of this offseason, with needs. Like, we need someone to play this position. We need a starter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just trying to find the best third or fourth safety out there. It's, no, we need a starter. And not at safety specifically. I mean, maybe, but, I mean, number two corner will be 100% up for grabs. And they're probably just going to be looking at, like, who is the best player that we can get, whether it's, you know, drafting or trying to sign a free agent. Because I'm pretty sure, and I'm not going to look at it and fact check, but I'm pretty sure that Acker, Gaines, and Mitchell are all free agents.
Okay.
Which technically means, I mean, unless they decide to keep Revis, which they won't keep Revis either, that he's a free agent too. So that means the only two guys...
Nelson.
...are Nelson and Peters that are under contract as corners for this team next year. I mean...
They could use a veteran.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I'm saying. You know, if you get rid of Tomba, like, who's the starter opposite Justin Houston next year? We don't know.
No, that's, and, I mean, that's need number one.
You would think, like, right now Ragland is starting next year.
Yes, definitely.
But we don't know if KPL is going to be here or not. He's in the last year of his contract.
But we've never shown too much interest in that second middle linebacker spot. So maybe I would think we go into the season with KPL.
But, I mean, Benny Logan... It's on a one-year contract. You don't know if they're going to bring him back or not.
Yep.
You don't know if they'll decide that they want to keep Alan Bailey or not.
I would
not.
Think Bailey's gone. But we'll
I mean, see. Like, there are positions all over that defense where it's like, we need a player.
Oh, yeah. They're going to have to retool.
Yeah. Do you want to come play with Justin Houston, Eric Berry, and maybe Marcus Peters, essentially? But, I mean, that's what you're selling as Definitely. A defense.
No, and those slots that could be filled easily. Mm-hmm. We've seen, well, I was going to say we've seen this team do it, but I guess Dorsey's gone. But... You know, they need to fill out those second... Like, because we got stars on defense. Like, we got some pieces there. We just need to fill it out. And we got money to do it. We haven't had money for 2 years. We haven't been able to really do much. Everything's been on a budget.
Yeah.
We're going to have a little bit of money this year, and then before the 2019 season, we're going to have a ton of money.
Yeah, and I mean, that's where...
You know how many veterans are guaranteed to be here in 2019?
I mean, how many veterans are even guaranteed to be here in 2018? Like... There ain't much, man.
I looked at the veterans in 2019, and here are the guys who I think are guaranteed to be here. Eric Berry, Travis Kelce, Larry Duvernay-Tardif. The end. The end. Like, nobody else is really under contract, or maybe you have a big question mark about him. I mean, it starts with Justin Houston. You can save $14 million that year. But, you know, off-season Dirk, he wants to come out. He wants to come out and play. He's got a lot of notes this week, but I'm keeping him.
It's okay. We got to relax.
I'm keeping him down.
We gotta relax because the Chiefs are still tied for third place in the AFC West. There's a big game on Sunday.
One of the weirdest seasons I can ever remember.
Let me.
Hang on.
Go on. Real quick. Last thing on Peters. Do you think that... So, I know that people all agree that with it being the Oakland game, that it, like, means more to him.
Yes.
Did that in any way, like, deter you? Like, this is... It's the biggest game of the year? Like, you really want to set him down after we already gave up 400-some-odd yards passing
last time with Peters?
Like,
Part of me thinking that? Yeah, definitely. But...
You made it sound like you didn't really want him to be suspended or didn't think that.
I'm down with it. I think it's a bit of a last gasp to motivate the team.
See, and I don't. I know that we could probably like go another 20 minutes on it. Sure. I just want to say that I don't think that Andy did this for the team. I think Andy suspended Marcus for Marcus. I don't think it has anything to do with trying to show the team something.
That's fair.
I could be wrong, but like this seems like a Marcus Peters thing, not a Kansas City Chiefs thing to me. I could be wrong, but like I don't know who it affects other than Marcus. Because the only other guy that you've seen that has like really had some tantrums is Kelsey.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And people talk about that thing, which was a pretty similar situation, really. But A, he got ejected from the game.
Yeah.
And
threw a towel.
B, like, he got suspended. At the ref. He got suspended for the first quarter of the next game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of, I don't know when he got kicked out. I think it was the fourth quarter.
Really like announced it, but that was the weird situation of like, we don't know if Andy suspended him or not, but like we didn't target him the whole game. And
no, that you're thinking of earlier this year when he had the one target, one reception, 1 yard game. That was definitely a suspension. Not even up for debate. No, he didn't play the next game, the next first quarter.
He threw his towel, right?
I think it was against Jacksonville last year, and then I think he didn't play the first quarter of the Tennessee game. Or maybe he did against it's somewhere in there. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
I will continue to say this every week. I still think, you know, the problem with Marcus Peters is that he looks bored out there and not challenged, and there's one really simple, easy way to challenge him and have him follow the best receiver all game. I'll say this every week if I have to, but I think that will help Marcus Peters and the team.
I think it will, too. I don't know who they would have done that with against the Jets.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily apply every game. I mean, I think Kearse plays the slot because he was tearing up Nelson over and over. So I think he would have been chasing Robbie Anderson.
Who I don't want him to chase, frankly. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, Marcus Peters should be able to cover him, but Robbie Anderson is like Tyreek. But he's taller. Like, that's just what he is. And, I mean, Peters is... can do that, but you're going to get a lot of those 10-yard cushions.
I still think he would thrive on the competitiveness of that. And it would keep his head in the game all game instead of, you know, lollygagging over there, swatting flies, and then, you know, they throw a 15-yard pass on him and he's just kind of, you know, not really into the game, so he just gives up this easy 15-yard pass and it's just like, dude, Peters, come on, you have to defend that. And he's just like, well, I haven't been throwing it all game, I didn't think they were going to throw it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I completely agree, but I just...
I'll say it every week.
I don't know, man. I don't know if he's going to be a Chief next year. I got to be honest. I really don't.
Yeah, you want to put a percentage on it? Percentage that Marcus Peters is on the team week one, 2018.
I don't want to go too high, but I mean, I think it's probably like 65-35 in favor of he's here.
I'll go.
But, I mean, that's a pretty significant number.
Oh, yeah. I'll go 80. 80%.
80-20, he's here?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I just...
I think it's more likely we see, like, a trade demand. And we don't do it. We just kind of wait it out. But, I don't know how Peters is going to respond to this.
A lot of it depends on how he responds, but I got to tell you, I mean, to me, a lot of it depends on how the team responds, too, because, to me, like... If we lose in
and the team gets like completely destroyed at home, and we're 6-7. I don't know how Marcus is going to look at it.
Yeah, well, who's he cheering for on Sunday?
Because there's two things that, and this is where the maturity and the leadership for him have to come in. He can either choose, if I would have been out there, we would have won, and say, screw you guys, it was so stupid that you suspended me. Or he could say, if I would have been out there, we would have won, but it's my fault that I wasn't out there. If that's the way that he looks at it, and this is an actual wake-up call for him, which is what I said. Like, I agree with his frustrations. I understand them. But I think that we have to expect better of Marcus, especially because of how good a player he is. But especially if the team loses and he comes back afterward and is essentially in this I told you so mode, he's going to be completely checked out. Mm-hmm. I would imagine for the last 3 weeks like, we're not in the playoffs right now.
Oh yeah.
And you guys suspended me for a game and we lost because I wasn't out there or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it could get ugly.
And I think that, so like I felt like the only two cards that Andy really had to play for the team of like, maybe this will help us in some way, are starting Mahomes and suspending Peters.
Yeah.
And Peters didn't really warrant it, I don't think, until he acted out the way that he did on Sunday. But that, and again, it wasn't just about Sunday. But because of the way that Alex played, it was like, well, we lost, and this thing happened, and Andy Reid had to react to something. And he couldn't bench. Like, the team needs something to happen. And I don't think that, like, benching Marcus is for the team, but, like, Andy had to, he had to do something, and he couldn't bench Alex. It's so weird.
So I think that's for the team. I think that's motivating the team.
I don't think it motivates the team. Like, you've come to my side. It's so weird. Like, I don't think it's, like, a team thing. I mean, what does benching Marcus Peters against the Raiders do for the team that motivates them? Do you think that there's anybody on the team that's going to be like, man, he benched Marcus, like, we got to go out and win now? Like, that doesn't, I don't get that. I don't think it's necessarily motivating for anyone other than Marcus, but I can see the team just being like, man, this is bad. Like, this is where we're at. Yeah, we're about to play division rivals.
Really tough to say. Part of it might be like, he's kind of running amok and players are like, like, Peters can do whatever he wants because he's so good. And so maybe this serves as a bit of a wake-up call. I don't know. Team sports are fucking weird. I think people downplay the psychology of it, and I think it's a large part of it. Like, I could argue with Danny Parkins or Nick Wright about that for days.
Yeah.
And they would never convince me.
Can I just...
Because I played sports and they didn't.
Can I just say that I thought that this year wasn't really going to matter that much, and then got emotionally invested after 5 games. And now, I hate this season. This season sucks. It sucks so much.
It's not boring.
I'm so sick of it, though.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out ways to encapsulate how I was feeling about the Chiefs last night so I could have a clip to play. And the one that best did it, I don't know if it... if it plays well, but it was from Life Aquatic when Jeff Goldblum is like, some crooked fuckers broke into my sea lab. I'm so pissed I want to spit. Like, that's just how I feel. I'm so pissed I want to spit.
See, I look at it, my pop culture comparison would be the Bundy curse.
Mm.
If you're a Married with Children fan. And it's basically just like, nothing good will ever happen to us. Like, this is God's way of keeping us down. And so as soon as things look like they're, you know, at their peak, that's when things will go wrong. And we were sitting there at 5-0, like, just kind of waiting, like, hey, we're Chiefs fans, we're 5-0, and we're not going to be on the top of the NFL this whole time. What's going to happen? And then these last 7 weeks have happened. So that has been the Bundy curse, slamming the Chiefs back downtown. But Chiefs Jets game. Let me get this off real quick. Oh yes, folks, it is the deep dive. One of my favorite stats. It was a weird game. Let's say that. It led to some fun statistical deep dives. Let's start here. The Jets had 13 third down conversions. 13 of 20. That's the most in an NFL game since 2011.
13 conversions?
13 conversions.
Okay.
They ran 39 more offensive plays than the Chiefs. I've got no stats. I couldn't find stats on that, really. Just kind of stuff to look up. Their plays run. Shit, I don't have the number. I think it was 88. But it was the most plays run on a Chiefs defense since 1988. And the most plays run by any team in the NFL this season. The Chiefs had 17-11 time of possession. So 17 minutes to 43, essentially. That is the least for an NFL team since 2012. And here's my favorite stat. I was so pumped to find it. It's pretty fun. Teams with under 18 minutes time of possession since 1983. So held the ball for less than 18 minutes in an NFL game. Happened 55 times. Teams are 2-53 holding the ball for 18 minutes or less. So kind of a factor.
Who were the teams that won?
One of them was the Colts in like 09. So it was a Peyton team. And then the other one was some random game. Didn't take note of it.
The Chiefs were really close. They were the Oakland referee crew away from...
Well, yeah. I mean, if you take away the Benny Logan personal foul, which I think you could debate if it should have been called or not,
He told Mellinger he did the same thing like the play before.
And Mellinger had the screenshots.
I didn't really... I
knew it was a penalty, which I don't think most people actually knew. So if that doesn't get called, I think the Chiefs win. Mm-hmm. Because then they would have just had to drive down for a field goal, which they essentially did, you know, and it changes everything. But I think the Chiefs win that game if they just allow that field goal to be kicked. And I got to tell you, man, there's not a whole lot of difference between this team, this year's team, and last year's team, other than they're losing close games. And last year's teams won close games. Like, I think we all kind of overrated the team after last year. One-score games here. 2-5 in one-score games this year for the Chiefs. 7-3 last year in one-score games. And people like to say, you know, that's a luck thing. And I kind of ran... I did an article before the season talking about how turnovers change every year and close games change every year. And the Chiefs... were at the top of that list, pretty much. So the Chiefs and the Raiders for the biggest expected regression is the word. And we've seen both Chiefs and Raiders regress majorly. So it holds some credence, I would say.
I'm just not having fun this year. And I think that, like, there have been some individual moments, I guess. But I'm just, like, I'm over it. And I hate that feeling, but, like, that's just kind of where I feel like I'm at now. It's just, like, if the Chiefs go to the playoffs, I don't care. If the Chiefs go 6-10, I don't care.
I still can, I'll care about a playoff game. I can't not care about a playoff game. I'll come around. Obviously, it's like that right now, but...
I mean, if they, if
I think,
they
I think you'll come around if
in
they
a playoff game, I'll be like, "Hey, all right, we're in a playoff game." Yeah. But that's going to start about 30 minutes before, and then I'm going to nervously drink myself into a stupor.
That sounds great. How's that not so fun?
Awful, because we'll lose, and then I'm going to feel like crap the next day.
I will say Sunday was the maddest I've been at the team all season by far, and I think it was because I was waiting for the Chiefs to respond to all this. I was waiting for it. Like, the Chiefs, you know, they're a good team. Eventually, they're going to come out of this in a big way. And they did, I thought, going up 14-0 in about 4 minutes. And I just thought there was no chance that they could lose that point. And then they still lost the game. And I was just... The third and goal touchdown from the 11-yard line before half was the low point for me. Frank Zombo just sitting there like a statue at the 8-yard line, just letting the touchdown happen right behind him. Like, hey, dude, it's third and goal. Like, the goal line matters, not the 8-yard line. The 8-yard line doesn't matter. The goal line matters. Nobody should allow a touchdown on third and goal at the 11-yard line. It should be impossible.
I've seen you talking about that play fairly often, a few times, and maybe it's not you having multiple times where you're tweeting about it, but it's Twitter's stupor. Did you see this or what you missed since you were here last? And it's always like the same ones. I'll be gone for 6 hours and it shows me the same tweets from 2 days ago.
Yeah. Oh, then you switch over to the other, to the Amateur Hour account, and then you see the same tweets again. Mm-hmm. Like,
yep. But I keep seeing you talking about it, and I'm like, I don't even know what he's talking about. No idea what play he's referencing.
Well, you should.
But he is really.
You should. It was the worst play of the Chiefs season. About the worst play.
Are you sure it wasn't butt kicker missing a 38-yarder to break his streak of however many straight?
I got love for butt kicker.
I do too.
I can't believe that ball didn't go through, though. It looked like, I don't know what happened, but it looked like enough time had passed that it should have gone through the upright, and then all of a sudden it hit it. You know what? I blame the wind. Blame it on the wind.
Well, folks, the Chiefs play the Raiders on Sunday at noon at Arrowhead
Stadium. It's too cold!
I don't know if it's going to be too cold or not, but it might
be. Nah, it's going to be relatively warm. It's
probably going to be fine.
That's good. That's good, because if it was cold and they beat us, it would be the end of that.
Yeah.
But since it's going to be warm and we're not going to beat her, like, it's not going to matter. We got our excuse.
Okay. I can dig that. All right.
I'm just carrying over excuses for why Mahomes can still be good and why it can still be too cool for the Raiders. I'm just pushing it all off to the future.
Nah. This has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He's just Dirkness, and this is Coldplay. And they're going to try to sing the song. I feel
Coldplay.
My football team right now. Yeah, man.
This is the song I took a bath to after one of those games.
Yeah?
I don't know.
Did you take a Coldplay bath?
I took a bath, and I told people I listened to Coldplay, but I don't actually have any Coldplay on my phone.
You gotta just get Spotify and listen to music unlimited forever.
Yeah.
I gotta be honest, I don't know how people listen to music that don't have Spotify. I'm like,
well, I illegally download the music for free, and I put it on my iTunes.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, I don't know where you do that. I'm like, if I have Spotify, and I pay this, like, little fee on my phone every month, it's just on my Sprint bill, and I can listen to whatever I want. And it's great. I never have to worry about, this thing, I gotta go buy that CD, or I gotta go get the down. Nope, I don't download it. Get it. It's there.
Some of us are balling on a budget, man. Some of us can't afford those perks.
Like, I'm wealthy.
Yeah.